All right, we're officially open here. So, good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club Inforum, Connect Your Intellect. You can find them online at commonwealthclub.org/inforum. And you can follow the best of our speaker dialogue on Twitter from our handle at InforumSF. I'm Gary Danko and chef principal of Restaurant Gary Danko, and we're here with Joanne Weir. So just a little bit of background about Joanne. Joanne is the host of her currently up-and-coming public television series, Joanne Weir's Cooking Confidence. And Joanne has written 17 cookbooks. I had to take a breath at that one, but including the James Beard Award-winning Weir Cooking in the City. In addition to her cookbooks, writing, Joanne is editor-at-large at Fine Cooking and has contributed to Bon Appetit, Savour, Cooking Light, Food and Wine, Gourmet, Sunset, Better Homes and Gardens, and it goes on. Joanne also teaches cooking classes in her home kitchen in San Francisco, hosts culinary journeys around the world, and just recently is executive chef at Copita in Sausalito. So Joanne, welcome.
Thank you, thank you. Did I really do all that?
And you still got more coming, so.
Oh, really?
First of all, I have to commend you at opening in a restaurant. You know, I always thought this would be like tapas to mezze, Mediterranean food, and then all of a sudden, your first restaurant is a tequilaria, right?
Yes. Well, you know, okay, so my 16th book was a book called Tequila, and which was a really fun book to write, great research.
And that was just a romantic journey to tequila country.
Right. A couple times,
yes. Exactly, right?
But so I wrote that book, and I was a really good friend of mine, Larry Mandel, who's a very well-known restaurateur. He tasted my margarita. Well, actually, he said his favorite drink was the margarita. And he asked me, he said, I'll duel you. You make your margarita, I'm going to make mine. He said his was fantastic. Well, I tasted his, and it was so high in alcohol. Oh, I hope he's not here.
Oh, my God.
It was so high in alcohol. And mine was really good, and he tasted it, and he said, that's the best margarita I've ever had.
Usually your peeve is that it's too sweet, right?
Yeah, I don't like that.
Don't
I like just
sweet,
a very
sweet.
Simple margarita. It's just agave nectar, 100% agave tequila, and also lime juice. So anyway, Larry tasted it. He said, it's the best margarita I've ever had. And he said, if I ever found the space, would you open a Mexican restaurant with me? And after two margaritas, I said yes. But really, I'd always toyed with the idea. Did I ever tell you that? I always wanted to open a restaurant, but I always said I had to wait for the right person to come along.
We had
along
talked about it a while, and I always thought the Mediterranean thing, but now?
You know, maybe that'll be next. No, I think I honestly, we opened in May, and I have never worked so much in my life. Now I know what you do.
Uh-huh. Well, Joanne and I used to talk all the time, and all of a sudden she opened a restaurant, and she's not available, and I was like, oh, my God.
I know.
So,
it's true.
But also,
no, it's what it is like now is I have two full-time jobs, and, you know, my other job of, you know, writing, as you can see, writing and teaching was really full-time, and was more than full-time, and then I added a restaurant to it, so now it's, like, shocking.
And combined with your culinary tours and all of that stuff, so.
Right.
Chefs don't sit at home, basically. We do when we can and we want to and love that, but
no, I get home from the restaurant and immediately I go to my emails. And yesterday I was writing a story for a magazine for Cooking Light, and then after that I went to the restaurant, and today I was doing went to a P&L meeting, and it was like it just doesn't stop.
Uh-huh.
But it's good. I'm happy, and I love what I'm doing. I'm a little stressed.
So you had a stint also back with the Agave Girls, right? That was kind of a little club you started.
I forgot about that. What happened with that was, okay, so the whole inspiration, I've always liked tequila as a spirit. And so I went to the launch of Corzo as a tequila, really wonderful one that came in this sexy square bottle. And this was years ago. And I loved that, you know, that launch was really interesting. But what happened was I looked around and it was mostly men. And I was there, just one of like three or four women that were there. So I went around and talked to the women. And I said, do you like tequila? And they said, yeah, I love tequila. So I thought, you know what? I mean, women like tequila as much as men. I also thought was a great thought, that that was a great way to meet men, to go to tequila tastings, because there were so few, there were so few women there. But anyway, I thought I really wanted to start a group called Agave Girls. I started it for women who love tequila, and then I said, oh, what I'm going to get is a bunch of swilling women. So I decided to change it for women who appreciate tequila.
Uh-huh.
So I did a few events, charity events, And I kind of quit the club.
And then
I
tasted
forgot.
Around all the tequila you could. And
I
so.
Did. I did a few events, charity events, and then I said, oh, I can't do this too.
So are now a just... restaurant out of this, and who
so,
knows?
You know, maybe I should do an Agave Girls event at...
that would be fun, actually.
At Copita. So. It would be really fun.
All right, let's go way back to, like, you know, the childhood
I know where we're
bearing.
Going.
Like, how did you get into food, Joanne?
Oh.
And have such a craze and passion for food because...
Well, first of all, I studied fine arts in college, and you know, it was well. No, I should go back. I can
but
start.
You grew
at,
up in,
I can start
you grew up
in
on
third
a farm,
grade.
Right? You grew up in like
no,
Amherst.
I actually I grew up in Northampton, Massachusetts, uh-huh. But my mother was a professional cook, and my grandfather and great grandmother, and I really grew up. My mother was an amazing gardener, but also a great cook. My grandfather had a dairy farm. A really beautiful dairy farm in the Berkshires in western Massachusetts, and we used to go there every Saturday and have these unbelievable lunches. And I'm sure I've told you before, but mm-hmm. You know, we would arrive on Saturday, and he would have the table set underneath the maple tree, and he would make these chicken salad sandwiches. And he would have butchered the chicken, made homemade mayonnaise, made the rolls.
Mm-hmm.
He would serve homemade potato chips, which were my favorites, probably why I'm obsessed with potato chips to this day. And also for dessert, he always served his homemade maple walnut ice cream. And, you know, that was the maple syrup that he also made. We were sitting under the trees.
Doesn't get more New England than that,
right.
Does it?
Like... It doesn't. I mean, you kind of had a similar...
Yeah, we have similar ones, you know, basically right. Growing up. And, you know, I just remember the food, basically.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
Had a garden every summer. And,
right.
Of course, cornfields around right. You forever, so...
And
those
that was
the...
also, you know, you grew up in New England in four seasons. It's, you know, it's funny. I was here years ago when people started talking about seasonal. I thought, my mother didn't think anything else but seasonal. You uh-huh. Know, growing up in New England, it was spring, summer, autumn, winter.
All four of them,
winter,
exactly.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, they know it very
they
well
They all came
right
with
now.
Their own wardrobe, too, right?
Yeah,
you got more
right.
Changes
you
of
moved
clothes
the closet.
Back then. Exactly.
You moved the clothes in the closet.
Yeah. So you grew up, mom, growing vegetables and...
Yep.
You've kind of returned to that, right? Because that's what it's all about right now, is growing your own food or knowing
well,
where it's
I don't,
coming
I
from.
Well, I live in the city, so I don't really have a garden, though I would love to. But we do at the restaurant.
Uh-huh.
We have a garden that's up in the hills in Sausalito, and it's really wonderful. One of the things that we grow that's so interesting is Sausalito watercress. Have you heard about it?
Is it grown in water or it's
it is.
Garden grown?
It is, uh-huh. But it started in our gardens. And there are a lot of restaurants buy Sausalito watercress.
Oh,
it's really?
Really
great. It's the old-fashioned. It's not hydroponic. It's just a really great watercress.
Uh-huh.
And so our gardens are full of it.
I remember when I went to Mendocino a few years back to see Lance back years ago that
right?
We picked watercress down by the water and where the fresh
right.
Water was
yeah, yeah.
Coming into the salt water. And that was amazing.
Yeah.
So, but it's great, so... All right, what else? Let's see. So love of cooking came from your mother, your father?
My father. You know, my father being Lithuanian, his family, they also had a farm. So both sides of my family had farms. And my grandparents on my father's side, it's funny, my mother didn't really think of that food as quite as serious as her family's food. But they, you know, they also had pigs, and that was the best pork I'd ever had in my life.
Mm-hmm.
The roast pork on Sunday that we had at my grandmother's was amazing. So Saturday was at my mother's. Sunday was at my father's parents. And so it was opposite directions. My mother's family was in the Berkshires, and my father's family was in the Connecticut River Valley. So
the Tananias is the Lithuanian side? Or the,
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what is
my
Lithuanian food like?
Well, we had delicious
hearty?
Food, actually. It was, but no. We had pierogies and galumpkis and sauerkraut, the best sauerkraut. I think I've cooked that for you before.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's good.
I know.
I have Hungarian father,
right.
So we had made sauerkraut and stuff.
Right.
Like that too. So
I think
we have
to do that. We need to make some sauerkraut.
It's very healthy for you.
Uh-huh.
You need to have it weighed and covered
yes,
and stuff.
Yes, that's
so.
Right. I remember my grandmother had one of those gigantic crocks. And
isn't it funny how you remember the flavors of your childhood? Like
right.
You remember the flavor of that pork, and you never forget it until
right.
You taste it again. And you're
I
like,
know.
Oh, my God, this tastes like when I was a
it's
kid.
It's true.
So.
It's true. And you keep searching for that flavor, especially the pork, because it's so much harder to get.
And you had chores to do, I'm sure. Large family. Five children in your
Four.
Family? Four.
Four
children.
Chores.
Did mom make you do things? Or
you know, the interesting thing with my mother, was she didn't really let us in the kitchen very much.
Oh, really?
I mean, okay, so I have one story I do have to tell about, and I'm sure you probably know this story, but I was about 8 years old, maybe 10, and I wanted to make some oatmeal cookies. And so I was in the kitchen, and my mother was in the other room. I wanted to do this unsupervised. I'm sure she was happy. My mother got kind of nervous with people in the kitchen. And she just liked to do the cooking. And so I said I was going to make these oatmeal cookies. And I started making the cookies, and I yelled to my mother, "Mom, you need to get some more baking soda." She said, she yelled back to me, "Well, that's funny. I just bought a brand new box." So anyway, I made these cookies. I like rolled them perfectly into balls, and I placed them on the baking sheet. And no, I thought that they were, I just had them perfect. I put them into the oven, and you know, they cook really quickly. In like 10 to 12 minutes, I looked in the oven, and honestly, it was one cookie that had spread all the way across.
So you invented the tweel is what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. It went down the sides and onto the floor of the oven. So anyway, what I had done was I put a cup and a half instead of a teaspoon and a half. That was one of my early memories of cooking. But anyway, as we scraped those into the trash, you will love, my mother said, she tasted a little bite. The great mother that I have, and she really is an amazing mom. And you know my mother, she's so incredible. She said, "They still taste good, honey." And they were
as
awful.
As the baking soda
they were awful.
Burning her mouth, like, you know how that flavor is just like so dumb.
Oh, it was. It was like,
That's crazy.
Maybe that's called acrid.
This is part of your influence for why you wrote Cooking Confidence, because it does take a certain practice and then building your confidence to cook on a, you know.
Well, you know what I thought of? I mean, in terms of writing the book, it was really, I talked to a lot of people about, I wanted to write another book, and I was working on the TV show too, and I was really thinking, in talking to people, like, what is it? Why don't you cook? And a lot of people said the same thing, I don't have confidence, and I was really shocked by that. People said things like, I have no clue what ribboning is. Like, they said, I think of ribboning as something you tie around a present, and scalding. They have no idea what scalding
is. All those terminology.
And so, to me, I thought, what I really want to do is write a book. I mean, I don't think that people, labor over what are they going to have for breakfast and what are they going to, have for lunch. It's really how to make delicious food for your family for dinner. So what I wanted was 100 courses. I have 100 courses, 100 dishes that you can make for dinner that you're not going to spend hours and hours in the kitchen. You don't have to go to 20 stores, but that you can cook them on Tuesday night for your family, and you won't spend hours. But then you can also cook them on Saturday night for guests, and people will be wowed. All you have to do is make a first course and a dessert. And so that was kind of the premise for the book. And so I thought if you can make one recipe and you can succeed at that recipe, then you're going to try another. And I really love the book. It's funny, somebody just the other night, I was doing an event and I was talking about the book, and somebody said, "Tell us a few of your recipes." And I just kept going through, and I was thinking, I want to go home and cook from this book. I just love the book, and I love the ideas.
You inspired yourself.
About
I love
it.
That.
I did. I inspired myself. I'm giving myself confidence.
It's true. You know, I find that, basically cooking at home is, it takes a little bit of sort of forethought and a little bit of planning. Right. But through organization, I think one of the biggest things, and you state this in your book, is that people get hung up on, like, if you can't, you have to have beans in this recipe. And if you go to the market and there are no beans available, but there's great asparagus, you need to learn how to sort of
just substitute
those. And so I think a lot of people get so stuck on the recipe that
they do.
They don't know how to move into a different vegetable because, pretty much all the green vegetables can be used interchangeably for the most part.
No, it's true. It's true. And I think that's one thing I talk about, like in the book, I talk about in the market, like how can you substitute things or, I think that that's really important to give people kind of the license and make things a little more approachable and take away the mystery and the scary part of cooking.
Right.
Because it's not rocket science,
So you're
you can make it into rocket science.
So you're saying go to the market first and don't go with a set recipe in your head, like, I need beans.
Because I think if you learn something like how to make a souffle, for example, then what you can do is you learn the basics of how to make a souffle, and maybe that's too much of a one to start with. But what you can do then is you substitute other ingredients, whatever's seasonal, and make it your own. So that's why I really think it's kind of the way we started, and I know we haven't talked about Madeline Kemen, and I know I will really want to talk about her, but that's kind of the way she taught us how to cook was, really learning the basic
recipes.
Well,
we had the creative list, remember?
Right, the creative list. I do remember.
We were given this huge list, and you had to, from that, derive a menu and then write the recipes from it.
Improvisational cooking.
And then you had to sit in front of Madeline and dissertate your recipe back, and then she would go at you like, what?
She would rip it apart.
It was fun. So let's jump to another subject. I worked in wine country. You did a show on We're Cooking in Wine Country, and you just made wine this first time.
I know.
A white and a red, correct? Chardonnay and a Cabernet or Pinot?
Chardonnay and Cabernet. Uh-huh. You know, the thing is, I've always loved wine as much as food. And I've always, whenever I'm teaching, I teach my classes in around the Mediterranean, and they're always in wine regions
because
I love it. And so it was really a logical thing. And I teamed up with Tim McDonald and started Joanne Weir Wines. And yes, our Chardonnay, I'm so happy to say, in the San Francisco International Wine Competition, there were 454 entries. And there were 20 golds, and I got a gold.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
Which
that's
is
very
great.
Good, so.
And then for the Cabernet, I'm really excited about the Cabernet. Thank you. I'm really excited about the Cabernet. We just got 90 points in Wine Enthusiast, and we were chosen as one of the wineries of the year. So it's really kind of
amazing.
How many
cases did you make?
We made 112 cases of the Chardonnay.
That's about 5 barrels of Chardonnay.
Yes, and then we made 100 cases of the Cab.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's great. It's been really, really fun. And you can taste it at Copita, but you can also taste it at Restaurant Gary Danko.
Yes, we have.
Did
it
you
there.
Know that? I don't even know if you knew. Your wine, your sommelier got in touch with us, which was wonderful. Thank you.
No, that's great. So have you, are you in the trenches picking grapes and stomping them? And...
I'm there, you know, choosing the fruit and talking with Tom Foster. He's the winemaker for the white. And working with Michael Trujillo, fantastic winemaker. I kind of call him, he was cult before cult was cult. And he's a great red winemaker who makes Carl Lawrence and also Sequoia Grove. And so I made that wine with him. And
so you can buy your wine online as well, right?
Yes. It really is. It's a direct-to-consumer online wine business, so on my website.
No, that's good.
Yes.
So I find working in Wine Country, I used to joke, like, you know, next lifetime I'm going to be a winemaker because they do in a year what we do in a day as a chef.
I know. It's true. No. My favorite line, one of yours, is that you were doing a dinner somewhere. It was like Hawaii or something.
I was on a cruise ship. I was on a cruise ship.
And you had spent 6 days making the dinner, and suddenly... Emmanuel,
the winemaker, comes in
and he carries in a case of wine, puts it down, and he gets the same acclaim.
Exactly. And he sets it on the counter. He says, "Okay, I'll see you on the beach."
You're
and
right.
I'm like, "Yeah, right."
I always love that story, but it's really true. You know, the other thing about the wine business is, boy, it's a lot of schlepping. You're carrying wine a lot.
Uh-huh.
You really get strong.
Let's face it, we got
in
into a schlepping industry, food and wine.
True.
We schlep it everywhere. So.
It's true.
But we're good
it's
at
true.
It. So.
And I love it. I love what I do, and I know you do too. So.
Well, I think the thing we love most is just having happy people, you know, at the receiving end of food and wine and, you know, service and all that. So it's very important. All right, let's go back to when we first met, because that was back in 1985.
Correct. It was October. October or November?
It was November because I was... Right. Joanne studied with Madeline Cameron back in Newton Center back in the early 80s, right?
That's correct.
Late 70s.
I think it was actually late 70s.
Late 70s.
I studied with her non-professionally, and then I studied with her for 1 year professionally and got a Master Chef diploma. That was 85.
And so that's when we met, basically, I studied Madeline the year before, and so I was coming back. Madeline typically opened a cooking school where she would train her first batch of chefs, and then she would take the choice ones, and then she would save them, and then they would run the restaurant the second year. So I entered back at the grand opening of Madeline's restaurant in Glen, New Hampshire.
I think you were the year before. You were there, right?
For that was her first class in New Hampshire.
Right,
Because Madeline like taught in Boston, and then she moved back to France because she wanted to be the first 3-star female Michelin in France, which never happened because I guess Mitterrand taxed her to death. And so I caught her on the rebound. She had just come back to New Hampshire and was teaching her first class at Auberge Madeleine in Glen,
That's
New
correct.
Hampshire. And we had a dorm like 7 miles up the way in
Bartlett. Right, I remember it. We all lived together and we studied together.
Right.
And in my class, there were only 8 students, and you were with each other for 1 year.
And so you opened the restaurant, and so I came to the November... grand opening and stuff. So that's when Joanne and I first met.
Gary, it was at Tom Marie's cooking school. Madeline came to teach, and it was when we were finished.
Oh, really?
And you came, I was assisting Madeline, and you came to say hi to Madeline, and she introduced us. And I think it was November.
And so you had moved to California by then, right?
Yes.
Because you were just starting to work at Chez Panisse, and I was at Behringer Vineyards up at the Food
that's
and
right.
Wine program. And
right.
so, so Joanne worked from 85 till 90, right, at Chez Panisse for 5 years.
Right.
And then you broke out on your own and started doing books and then teaching and traveling.
Right. But we should talk a little bit about Madeline.
Madeline, I don't know if any of you know Madeline Cameron. Brilliant woman.
Brilliant, absolutely. I think the smartest woman I've ever met in my life.
Wrote some amazing cookbooks. You know, she was French-born. She trained in language at the Sorbonne. And then she was a flight attendant, and she met her husband, Alan Kamen.
Right, correct. He was from Philadelphia.
And so they moved to Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and then Madeleine started to miss her cooking, so she started to teach French cooking in Philadelphia back in the 70s, right?
And that's when I studied with her non-professionally. I did this course for a year, and it was every Thursday night, and we would go there at 5:30 and end at 10:30 at night, and she would make the most extraordinary food, but we were studying the food from the women from the different provinces around France, and it was great. And I remember just sitting there starving, like by 10:30, we didn't get to taste a thing till 10:30. And I would just be like ready to just fall over. I'll never forget one thing she said to me. So she was, you know, she was pretty serious in the class. And that's putting it mildly, and I'll never forget. She looked at me and she went, "You!" And I went, "Oh, no." And I wanted to just fall below the table. And she said, and I say this now, it's many years later, but she said, "You have the face of French porcelain." And everybody in the class looked at me and were like, "Wow, what does that mean?" I remember like feeling like...
Well, Madeleine collected porcelain, like faience and all of those things. So she was paying you
still
a compliment,
partly there.
Joanne. I was the bad boy because I had a...
She loved you and I like we were daughter and son.
It didn't come like easy. I was the first... I wanted to go work with Madeleine years after I graduated the Culinary Institute of America, and she would not let me in the class. I was stalking her, literally, like calling her agent, say, "Does Madeleine have any openings?" "No, no, no." And then
sort of the same.
Finally, I called her publicist, and she said, "Oh, there's a woman that's pregnant, and she's having complications, and she will need to spend, you know, the rest of her pregnancy in bed, so she won't be going to the class." So I call Madeleine up, you know, and I call her at the worst times. I'd call her, and she'd be like, "Hi, this is Gary." She'd be like, "Gary, will you please give me the grace? I am celebrating my son's graduation party." You know, and I was like, "Oh, I'm so sorry," you know. So finally
please
I got hold of her, and, you know, I thought it was because I was a male and she was a feminist cook.
No.
But basically, I called her once and I was over it. I was either going to do it or not. And I was like, basically like, "Madeleine, what is the problem? Is it because I'm a man?" And she like slams her fist down in her fashion and says, "Gary, you're so full of shit. The reason I will not let you study with me is because you studied at the CIA and Hyde Park and those people give me grief." And I was like, "Oh my God." So I convinced her I was a very different, you know, graduate. And so she said, "Put your deposit in the mail and we'll see you in November."
Oh, yeah.
And so
that's funny.
So I was living in Vermont and I had all these products. I had Jules and Helen Rabin that baked beautiful wood-burning oven bread. I had guinea hen. I had ducks. I had geese. I had churned butter and cheeses from Vermont. And I filled my Volvo with all this stuff. And I just pull up and then open it. And she looked at me with surprise. And she's like, "Oh, you know." And for the first 4 days, she was really hard on me. And then one day she came over to me and said, like, "Gary, I want you to do the foie gras." You know, so I was at that point her chosen person. And so from then on, we were very good friends. And so, but Madeleine was a taskmaster that, you know.
I will never forget, Gary, one time you and I were with her for dinner at the French Laundry. I will never forget this. This was when the French Laundry, it had just opened.
Very new, yes.
And Thomas said it was just there. And she ordered two wines, and she wouldn't let us know what she ordered, and she wrapped them up in napkins, and she made me guess the white,
teacher,
and Gary had to guess the red, and I got the white, and I said that I knew that it was a Chardonnay from Sonoma, and I guessed it was Kistler. I knew it was Chardonnay, but I guessed Kistler because I knew she liked it, and I was right. Yes, thank God. But I don't remember. Did you guess?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't think you got it at all. And
being
I think
around
she
Madeleine,
was like,
you're always kind of on pins and needles. You would not say the right thing.
I know. I think that dinner had a few of those moments.
But
from what I remember. But, you know, I had a similar thing getting in. I got in touch with her, and she said, "I am sorry. There's a 3-year waiting list."
Uh-huh.
And she said, "There is no way." And I got in touch with her a couple times after that, and I said, "I have to come soon. I'm getting really old. I'm 30. I love that.
Madeleine was very particular. Remember, like,
I know, but
after
I
we had both graduated,
really
we had our, you know, careers going. We helped her at Behringer Vineyards because Madeleine eventually came to Behringer and sort of took over what I did there. But she ran the School for American Chefs where she did the same format. She'd get, like, 10 people for 3 weeks. She'd give them the creative list. If they did well on it, they became a student, and they came to Behringer for 3 weeks where they learned how to, you know, cook, and then they learned a little bit of winemaking. But we would do these big events, and you know, Joanne and I, then we have the whole bunch of chives, and we're chopping it, and
she comes over and hits the ceiling. She told me to chop one chive
at a time.
Chop it one at a time. And I'm like doing, you know, I just
like,
worked at
Chez
Panisse cooking for 500 people. And I was just, you know, trying to get it done. And there I was chopping one chive. I remember that. Yes, we did that at Meadowood, that event, right?
Exactly.
Or we stayed at Meadowood or something.
But, you know, Madeline's food was so amazingly delicious. You know, she did not play around. Every sauce had to be balanced. And, you know.
One time she said to me this amazing thing. She said, you know, that dish needs a little bit more salt. And I tasted it. I thought it was really good. And I swear she added like one granule of kosher salt. I honestly think she did. And it did taste better.
It did taste better. But.
And then I said, wow, this woman's good. I mean, she had the most cheese. Has the most amazing palate.
Now she's a pretty amazing person. So.
I really loved working with her, but it was also, it was very trying, but it was incredible.
So unfortunately, she's not teaching anymore, but she's pretty much, we never knew Madeline's age, so we can't even say to this
day. Actually, Gary, you and I took her on a little trip to France for her 75th birthday.
Right. Madeline wrote this book called The When French Women Cook.
Oh, I love that book.
It was basically about 10 women in her life and that. You know, basically during the war, the children in Paris were shipped out to relatives, you know, up in the French Alps. And so she sort of recounts her life with the females that influenced her life. And so Joanna had this idea, why don't we, for Madeline's 75th birthday, take her to France and kind of relive the trail of like...
Okay, so wait, can I tell you the first thing that happened? Okay, so we're driving and Gary's really tired from the restaurant. And I'm
in the back seat.
He's in the back seat,
Madeline's
and I'm in the front
ride.
With Madeline. And she's insisting that we take Gary because he's never seen Chartres. So we're going to take him to see it. And we get there, and I go around a corner, and I park the car. As we get out of the car, someone came around the corner and basically took the door off the
car. Trying to open the door, and it was like...
The car, I will never forget it in my life. And there it was like a French comedy.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly everyone's running around and screaming, and it was just, so that was the very first day. So we tied the car back together with the door back on, and we drove until we got it fixed, I think, right? I can't really remember that, but it was
Madeline was there, and she was the only one that spoke French.
Right.
And so she's dealing with this guy, and she's like, God, he's dyslexic or he's something. She had already diagnosed what's wrong with him. And
I know.
But to start that whole thing out, we're in Paris. Joanne and I put her up at the Georges V in Paris.
And you called me in my room. You called me to say, do you want to come downstairs and have a drink? But Madeline, in the meantime, had said she wanted to go to bed. And I said, okay, I'll take her upstairs. She and I were sharing a room. Gary, of course, had his own room.
The whole trip.
So he always had his own room. I was always sharing. So anyway, Gary calls me and said, do you want to come downstairs and have a drink? Do you remember this?
Uh-huh.
And he said, what is that noise? I said, it's Madeline. She's snoring.
Gary,
I'll never forget it.
The next day, we got in the car at like 4:30 in the morning. We rented a car.
Yes.
And so Madeline is going to be the co-pilot. And so Madeline gets there, and she's got a Michelin's like 1955 map with her. And we're like, and so she's driving, and we're like, we don't know this until we like... And she's like, no, don't.
No, I know why. Because what happened was she wanted to go to Chartres. But to get to Chartres, this road is going to say Lyon. But she didn't want to go to Lyon. She wanted to go to Chartres first. So she got really nervous every time she saw. So don't cross the river.
We're like laughing. We're like
laughing.
Just like howling in the
back
seat.
So every night, I have to tell you a little something. Every night after we finished me driving all day and being totally exhausted, Gary and I would go and we'd find some great bar. We'd put Madeline in the room. We'd find some great bar and we'd slam back a couple of beers. Honestly, it was quite an interesting trip.
We were in Strasbourg, remember that?
No. But I do love, we went to Sancerre, which was so wonderful. Uh-huh. Tasted some great wine, and she had set up some really wonderful things. Really, really wonderful.
That's great. So, a very like memorable career with Madeline Kamen. So.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some of your favorite dishes in the book.
I love one of the dishes that I really love is there's so many, but I love the soup that's a carrot soup that has spices in it. It's really, really delicious. It's got some split peas in it, and I love that combination because you get a little bit of protein, mm-hmm. but then you also have the sweetness of the carrots, and then There's some cardamom, coriander, a little bit of cumin.
So
and
sweet
some,
spices, basically, is
yes.
what they call those, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a little bit of creme fraiche on top and some cilantro. And it's just a wonderful kind of comforting uh-huh. winter soup. But it's so substantial, it'd be great even for a main course if you just served like a salad and some bread.
Joe and I both love those Middle Eastern spices
right.
and flavors and stuff. So.
I do love them. It is funny that I opened a Mexican restaurant because I still love all the food of the Mediterranean so much. Anything that has to do with olive oil and spices and all those wonderful herbs and garlic and tomatoes. And
when did you determine that the Mediterranean was your...
You know, that's interesting. I studied with Madeline, and, you know, I was very classically trained. I mean, really French classically trained. And when I came back, I invited all my friends over, and that's how I cooked. I really did. And I love that. I would spend a whole day making essences, and I cooked probably not as good as restaurant Gary Danko, but that's how I cooked. I mean, my food was very classic. But I really liked lighter, fresher food. For me, I think it was my mom because it was my mother's food is all about fresh vegetables and fresh vegetables that are, in my house when we had dinner, there was a table that was set with a small amount of protein, but honestly, it would be 8 or 10 vegetables. I talked to my mother last night and she was cooking for herself and she probably had like 4 or 5 vegetables. Uh-huh. And so I've always loved fresh and I love olive oil. I could drink olive oil. So.
It's good
olive
for
oil, right? Wine. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. So when did you first go to Europe as far as...
Oh, that's interesting. My very first trip was actually to Northern Europe, or I went to Scandinavia. I went to... it was during college, and I went to Finland. But my... Which is... I know, that's so
random. You didn't really
random.
Incorporate that into your cuisine.
No, I didn't. Peas and salmon. My next trip, I spent a month traveling around France and all around France and loved the south of France, loved Provence.
And you had studied with Madeline before that, right? And then went to study with Madeline or?
No, let's see.
You went to Europe first?
Oh, went to Europe, yeah, because I didn't study with Madeline until 1985. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I'd gone several times before that.
That's crazy.
And, but, you know, what happened before I studied with Madeline, I was talking to a friend who was working at Chez Panisse and said that I was really interested. And I was actually offered a job before I left.
Oh, really?
And I said, no, I'm studying with Madeline. And they said, well, you have a job when you get back. You know, we haven't had anybody that studied with Madeline. We'd love you to be part of our team. So when I got back, I knew that I had a job, which was really great. And, you know, it was pretty extraordinary for me working there. I loved
right.
the restaurant.
So you're talking about when you study with Madeline, you part of her program was to take the students
to France.
To Annecy, Francie.
Yep, to Annecy.
In the French Alps and basically
Savoie, right.
That's where Madeline had her cooking school,
right.
which was really an apartment with
right.
the dreams of opening her second restaurant. But when she moved back to New Hampshire, she kept that property and so it was part of your curriculum.
Right. So yeah. for 1 month we had students come and study with us.
So you trained other students under her supervision.
Right. Right. Uh-huh.
So, and basically, educating has been a big part of your life, right?
It
in
has,
the fine
you know,
arts.
It's interesting.
And...
because I got my degree in fine arts and I taught in high school in Boston before I studied cooking. But I also, during the course with Madeline, we also had to teach a class. And so when I did that, she said, you really have a gift for teaching. And I really did love it. It was like I put the two things together. I always loved teaching, and I'm really excited about
she
food.
She wasn't there
so
shaking
it was
her
really,
head like, no, like...
No, she wasn't. I remember doing duck, and she really loved it. And she said, you really have a gift. You know, you should think about teaching. And, you know, after working at Chez Panisse, and I'm glad I did that for 5 years, but I kind of branched away from it little by little. And I started teaching, first of all, at Tante Marie's Cooking School. And then somebody who had studied with us in France came to a cooking class of mine at Tante Marie's, and an Australian woman. Her name was Gwenda, a real character. And she came to my class at Tante Marie's, and she said to me, you know, would you ever consider coming to Australia to teach? And I remember saying to her, oh, that sounds like a great idea. And I was like, yes, I'm going to Australia. I was so excited. I was just really excited. And I started to travel and teach. And then I got in touch with Madeline after I got back from Australia. I went to Australia, by the way. The first year I went to Australia, they set up classes for me. I got there. I was going to be there for a month, and they had 28 classes for me. So I was teaching back to back in every single city from Sydney, Perth, Adelaide, Melbourne, Brisbane, and I love Australia. I've probably been back 15 times, 20 times since then.
Because you had quite a run there for like 5 years. You went to Australia.
Probably more like 15. Gee, I loved it. Sometimes I would go twice, and I'm actually going to go and teach again next year. I took a group with me last year, which was really, really fun. I love Australia. I love the food. I love the wine. The people, it's really great. But so when I came back from Australia the very first time, I said to Madeline, now what am I going to do? I mean, I was just teaching at Tom Marie's in San Francisco, and I wanted to do more than that. And she said, why don't you travel and teach? Why don't you talk to my agent? And I was like, agent? Wow, that sounds really fancy.
Big time, huh?
So I talked to her agent, and she set up classes for me.
Was that Lila Spencer?
Yeah, Lila Spencer. Yes.
That's who I track Madeline through, so I know her very well.
But, and so, so that's when I started traveling and teaching around the U.S., and then I wrote my first cookbook. So I traveled.
And then you never stopped after that, because 17 books later.
I know. I started, my first book was in 94, from Tapas to Meze.
Joanne has a whole shelf of her own cookbooks.
I think you do in your little library there at your restaurant.
I have a ton of books. Like, I think you throw yours out. I just add more bookshelves and put them in the office. But
no, I don't know. You know, it was interesting. This book, writing this book was interesting for me because I was really thinking, what do I want to do next? And it was really, in conjunction with the TV show, it just really made sense for me. And it stays with my teaching, and that's what the premise of the show is.
So when does the show air, actually? Because
well,
the book
on KQED,
is just
it's 12
right now,
noon.
Right?
The book is just released. Yeah. But those are the recipes from this whole year. And then we have 13 new shows that start January 5th. But we just shot, last year we shot 39 new shows. And those shows will go for 2 years. And,
That's good. Years back, Joanne used to have a producer and director. And I was like,
and
now
I'm
can
the
do this on your own.
And now I'm the executive producer of the TV show, too. So this was the first series I was executive producer. So, yes.
So you were body double, right? No, Joanne, don't say this. Yeah. Say that. No. Were you ever on Martha Stewart?
No, but you know, 2 weeks ago, I hosted Martha Stewart Radio in New York. I did it for a week. That
so you
was
filled
very
in for her.
Fun. Yes, very, very fun. So I brought the guests on, and I interviewed them.
Well,
I loved
good,
it. So. I loved it. It was really fun.
Because
I've done that a lot here in San Francisco for Gene Burns, it was really fun to do that.
So keep your eyes tuned for maybe a future.
Oh, so you asked me, though, about the show, 12 noon KQED, but it's also on Create, and I don't know the time slots. But we also, we just got WNET in New York, so that's really great, in Manhattan, so that's really great. We have all top 25 markets in the U.S., and we're in about 92, a little bit more than that, percent of the U.S. households.
Oh, that's great.
So the show's great. It's really done well.
So Joanne and I have travel cooked together and just travel pleasured together. So
So we have a couple of trips that we've taken together.
We have a lot of fun. Let's just put it that way.
So I think the first, would it be Provence? Or was it India?
We traveled taught in Provence.
Provence was first. Right. I was teaching a class. So what I do is I take my students to study with me, and I rent villas in different places around the Mediterranean. So I have locations in Morocco, Spain, Provence, and Italy.
I've only been to two of those.
But yeah, you have a lot more to go on the list.
Joanne bumped me after a while.
No, you're vying for, I think, Morocco. But I'm doing this year, in 2013, I'm Provence and Morocco. But anyway, so we spend a week together cooking and visiting and, different friends' wineries and people that produce cheese or olive oil or whatever. And Gary came with me to Provence and then also the Veneto, which was very fun.
And then we decided to travel just on pleasure. And so we decided to go to India because we both love Indian food.
And I was invited and I said, Gary, do you want to do it? And Gary said, I'm there. And so we went. Now, I have to tell you one thing about Gary. This was really great. I hope you don't mind. But Gary traveled with an extra suitcase. And inside his suitcase, I swear to God, it was a doctor kit. And he unzipped the suitcase, and it was full on one side. And I, honest to God, when I saw the tourniquet, I was like, what's going to...
How about the water purifier, Joanne?
Water purifier. He flipped it over on the other side, and there were Band-Aids. It was way beyond Band-Aids, I'm telling you. It was unbelievable. And I knew if anything happened to anybody, there was, I really can't even go into all the details, but we had everything.
We first of all went to Old Delhi and then New Delhi.
Which was great. We were in those Remember, we were riding around through the market. It was just shocking.
Well, in India, you have like, you know, total like dirt poor, wow, right next to filthy rich. I mean, it's just amazing. It's a very life-changing experience.
Right, it is. It's very humbling. It's true.
And
it
so we went to a lot of those things. And the first hotels we stayed in were very lush.
Very nice. And there was one, I think we were still staying in Kerala. We were going on one of those boats that takes you through the backwaters.
Yeah, the rice boats through the backwaters.
Right, which was so beautiful. But
that one had snake nets and all these sort of things.
We stopped at that spice farm, which was interesting. And then we stayed at a hotel that was probably not quite, it was probably the best hotel that was there, but it was not quite as
I remember
plush.
Udaipur, like the Oberoi, that was like
that was
palace.
Beautiful.
Remember, we had our own little pool, like
right,
you could swim out
we
into.
We kept promising
like this
each other we were going to go back there for a week with our respective partners.
Crazy.
Can we do that? Maybe we should do that. That would be really fun. But that, the other thing I have to tell you about that with Gary is he had handy wipes. And he basically swabbed
down my
entire room.
Well, we went into like a less than
room.
Desirable hotel, and so I was like, "Oh my God, Joanne!"
It wasn't that bad.
Like,
he swabbed everything.
I took out.
He said, "And this is a culprit." And it was the phone, the whole thing, the locks on the handles on the door.
I was determined. I am not going to get sick on this trip.
No,
like,
and we
was
didn't.
Determined.
We
and
didn't.
We were one of the two that did not.
I had the Ayurveda massage with the dripped oil on my head, as Gary said. I didn't get the oil out of my hair for about a week. It was
crazy.
Fun. It was very fun.
All right, I have to do a little break here in that. As a reminder in our audience, this program is presented by the Commonwealth Club in Forum, Connect Your Intellect. And tonight we are hosting Joanne Weir, Hot Out of the Oven. I'm Gary Danko, chef and proprietor at Restaurant Gary Danko. And tonight we are joined by acclaimed chef and author of the new cookbook, Cooking Confidence, Joanne Weir. Also, we're going to take some audience questions soon, so please start lining up at one of the mics. And please remember that we're looking for a short one-part answer. So, continue with our Indian trip. I have some funny things to talk about Joanne, but
uh-oh,
we decided like we're going to do this thing. I've always seen the like Ayurvedic massage where they have the oil streaming on your forehead. So we are in, I forget which hotel.
I want to try everything when I get someplace.
So we go into our separate treatment rooms, and Joanne comes out, and, you know, the oil has streamed for 20 minutes on her face and into her hair. And so if you look at Joanne's hair, it's just like a sponge. And so Joanne has, like, so much oil.
That's true.
That it took her, like, a week just to shampoo, like.
No, though, Gary, honestly, the reason I'm laughing is because I'm thinking about a massage that you had
in
Vietnam. And it was, can I change it to go to Vietnam a little? I have to tell you. So they gave us these clothes to put on, right? Those shorts.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and you know, like Vietnamese people are tiny. And you look like you came out in those clothes. And they put you in that chair. And there's, I'm telling you, the people who are like one quarter your size. And they're giving you a massage as they're kind of moving your body around. I will never forget it in my life.
Well, that was supposed to be just a foot massage, wasn't it?
I know.
And it's like this woman gets up on back of me.
I know
like,
she was.
Like
I mean,
lifting.
We're like turned around.
God.
Oh, it
we
was funny.
So
I don't know. It really was funny.
Back to India, when you have an Ayurvedic massage, it is full on oil. And so
yeah,
you have this teak like plank you're laying on, and it's got like a really thin little edge on it. And this thing is so like lubed up that if you were like to move in one side,
really?
You're like,
you're like a, and the clothes, speaking
oh,
of clothing
this,
again.
Like, for the men, they put this little thing, and it's like they shredded these two little tabs, and I'm naked, and they put this thing around me, and
me too.
I just remember during the massage, this guy takes it and pushes my unit back into this little, like, and I was like, what is the big, why did you even put this thing on me? Because it's not.
Oh, no, it wasn't any more attractive on me.
We have had.
I will never forget that. The Ayurvedic
but Joanne
massage.
Decided, because when you do Ayurvedic, you have to go and sit with a doctor of sorts. And
oh,
Joanne
wait.
Was having some sinus problems.
Oh, that's
so
right.
he made her put this white powder up her nose. I don't know what it was, like this, like.
I don't think it was white, though. I actually think it was, like, pink.
I was
that
like,
burned so much. I was thinking, what, do I listen to anything? I will do anything they say, anything a doctor says,
God,
honestly.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Another
I did
was,
it. I did it.
Then we went to Vietnam. We have a good friend, Bobby Chin, that owns
yes.
a restaurant in Hanoi, right?
Oh, yeah. That was so the first night there, we went to his restaurant, and what he said to us, we're going to have a few cocktails.
Uh-huh.
And after the cocktails, I was feeling, like, really
Woo.
Relaxed. And he said, oh yeah, that's our cocktail that we put Valium in. And I was like, he said, now we've got some scooters outside.
Right, exactly.
And we've got these drivers and we all hop on the back of the scooters and they're going to give us a tour of Hanoi.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, whoa, let's go.
Let's go. We're holding on like,
Oh, I will never forget that in my life. We were going about 1,000 miles an hour, and that night was the night that we said, okay, it's fine. Let's eat street food.
Let's eat street food, exactly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we were traveling with another friend of ours. Anyway,
craziness.
It was fun.
So,
it was very fun.
I think it's time for a few question and answers here, but I only see one person up there, so please, don't be shy. Get in line. Ma'am?
Are you ready?
Yes, okay. Ma'am.
Hi, my name is Blanche, and I'm really enjoying your presentation. But I'm looking for some advice. I have a friend who I promised when she retired we'd both splurge and have a dinner at the French Laundry, which you mentioned early on. I tried for a month trying to get a reservation there, and I would like inside information from you on how to get a reservation at the French Laundry.
Well, I actually think what you should do is eat at Restaurant Gary Tanko.
That's
well,
very sweet.
Because really the food is so amazing, and you will be so well taken
like
care of.
No.
He can get you in. And I'm really connected, too.
I don't know how the French Laundry works as far as their reservations. I hear if you have a $20 bill and you go in line and wait at the front door at 10:01.
Oh, really?
No, that's what...
Oh, I don't know about that
My
one.
My friend Lori Glad used to do that for people, but I'm not sure how to help you there.
They're always completely booked. Even if I tried going out at midnight on the online reservation and it was booked already for a month later. So.
Well, let's say a prayer.
Oh, well, thank you.
I still think.
All right, do we have any other questions? Okay, well, we're going to continue
He's
on
right
with
here.
It. What's that? Okay, we have one.
I do enjoy your presentation very much, but Joanne, what is your process for putting a cookbook together? To me, that sounds like such a daunting process. Recipes, do you try them all?
She calls me and said, Gary, I need 10 recipes.
So we have your secret weapon here.
You know, it's interesting. That's a great question. It used to be so easy. I would talk to my agent and I would just say, hey, I want to write a cookbook and it's going to be about, first courses from the Mediterranean. And they'd say, great idea. But now you write a proposal. And a proposal is not just, a one page. It's many pages. And then it's including many recipes.
And they want a chapter at least.
A breakdown. And it can be, in the end, it can be 40 pages, a proposal, 30 or 40 pages. And they want sample recipes, and so it's a lot more than it used to be. So then once you, my editor will take that to several publishing houses and see who would like to publish the book, and then you work with an editor. And it's usually a 9-month process from the time you sign till when the book comes out. So this book I turned in quite a while ago, and it's a long process.
Even with like the
internet. Did that answer?
With the internet, there's so much other information out there that's not always trustworthy. But I think they're looking for books that have a specific tone and a unique angle because.
And also a way to sell your book. Mm-hmm. I mean, and one of the things they ask a lot now is what kind of social media do you have? Uh-huh. Who's following you? How many people are following your blog? Uh-huh. And whenever people ask me, I mean, I'm happy. I always send people my old proposals so they can see what it's like. But it's also they want to know that you have 20,000 people that follow you because they want to sell books and they're in the business to sell books. And it's pretty amazing that a lot of books have come out recently again. There was a little hiatus, but there are a lot of books out now.
Well, they were thinking like they weren't going to have a lot of books published, but they seem to still be.
Yeah.
There seem to be a lot about like chefs, like personal lives and stuff.
Right,
I just
a
read
lot.
One on Hubert Keller.
Yes. Yeah,
that's doing
a lot.
That. And so they want the story, basically,
right.
Of their lives and their careers.
Joey Bastianich. There's a lot that are out on people's personalities and their lives and being in the trenches. I think that all started with Anthony Bourdain, but he really was the first one.
He was a wild and crazy man.
Yeah.
crazy. So, all right, what else do you want to talk about, Joanne? Let's see.
What other trips did we go on? So in, I remember one thing that we did together that was really fun was you had never been to Venice, and I was teaching there, and so I took you to Venice, and we stayed in that fabulous place, and it was really fun tasting food and...
No, that's great. I mean, that's part of the whole cooking thing is that you go out and you experience cuisines in the culture in which, you know, they sort of came to life.
Well, that's what I try to do with the classes is, you know, it's really an immersion. And what I love about the classes that I teach in the Mediterranean is that I teach the food from that region, but also for that 1 week, we're completely immersed into a culture. It's about the food and the history and the geography and everything that it's, you know, that goes into it. And it's not just cooking in a kitchen. And my husband's the first to say, you know, it's more than just a cooking class. It's really a culinary journey and really an exploration. Like, do you remember being in the Veneto, which is when we were in Venice first, but we went to a friend of mine's house. He's got this beautiful villa. I remember making, he's a film director and he also makes wine, and we made risotto, red wine risotto with his red wine and rice that we had purchased in this huge pod out in the lawn of this gorgeous, gorgeous villa overlooking the hills of Custoza. I mean, those are the things that are wonderful, you know, that you don't get to see those. Those aren't something you read about in a, you know, a travel book, you know, those are the things you really get to experience. This year it was fun when I was in Provence. We went to a town called Bagno Vignone, and it's a town that's known for its mineral baths. And we took all the students. This is the first time I've seen my students in bathing suits. And they've seen me in a bathing suit too. But anyway, we went to these baths, and it was so unbelievable. It was just really an incredible afternoon of just swimming in this beautiful, beautiful town of that's just devoted to that and just a little different, you know.
Well, you try to encompass a lot of things. You know, there's a lot of wineries you go to. Of course, you go out to many meals. You cook a lot of meals.
We cook a lot too,
so you get to eat a lot. And...
But there are also hands-on classes, so people actually get to do the cooking, you know. And I think that's really important, not just a demonstration, because a demonstration is really... You know, with a demonstration, you're just watching someone, and it's easy to make you or me or you make something look really easy to do. But when you get to do it yourself, I think you really get to experience it. I remember in Provence making the brindade with the students, and they just go crazy. They think, oh, brindade, it's a salt cod puree with potatoes and olive oil and garlic. And people really love that. And, you know, they hear about it, and they think, oh, it doesn't sound good. But when they taste it, it's delicious.
No, it's a good thing. So, you know, you also bond with these people because a lot of the people that we went on those trips with still
absolutely
in contact to this day. They eat
I know, everybody comes to San Francisco, and I still see
They're always calling and saying, hi, we're coming into town. Can we get a reservation?
And somehow they also turn into best friends of mine. It's really interesting how I've met so many of my friends through those trips and classes. I just love them. You know, it's fun to do a demonstration here or there, but it's really wonderful to spend a week with someone who loves food like I do. So,
well, as you know, teaching cooking, patience is one of the first. And it's fun to watch people kind of like do that. And they, you know, they basically sort of power through it and they do their thing. And you're like, okay, no, so just a little, you know, but it's good. I always love when it's not such a great dish. You're like, oh, look what you created, you know.
No, but what they do, it's so funny. If the meal, if the dish doesn't work out, they blame it on the recipe. But if it's good, they all take the credit, which is really funny to me. Because I always want to tell them, you know, these are tried and true recipes. I'm not teaching you something here that, you know, you've never, you know, I've never done before. So.
Well, also they're using ingredients that, you know, are different when they're going to get home because the flours and the sugars and, you know, all the produce.
I always
and,
tell them that.
Always very different. So they learn it in, you know.
I can't tell you how many people, too, say they go home and they create the food. They get together with their friends and, you know, they or somebody they've come with and they make a whole meal and they cook for a lot of people. But well, you know what I love is that they all get together again. You know,
after the fact.
Which is great. It's so
great. So remember when we used to be with Madeline, we had to bring like 5 pounds of flour. Aluminum foil. This is to France, basically, because the foil in France is, like, so flimsy.
It's but I do make them bring kosher salt. I do bring kosher salt with me to on my trips to Europe.
You bring salt that way and then salt back this way. So.
Yeah, I bring the fleur de sel back, but I bring kosher salt there because I'm so used to cooking with it. And I really love it, and they don't have it.
So you've been to Morocco last year and taught for the first time?
Yeah, that was the first time I taught there, but I visited before. I love the food of Morocco. And
so you were in Marrakesh, right?
In Marrakesh, in a beautiful riad in Marrakesh called Jenen Tamsna. And beautiful, beautiful place. It's beautifully appointed rooms. And then the kitchen is extraordinary. And then I cook side by side with Bahija, who's she is the chef for the Riyadh or the hotel. And we cooked together, and it was so fun. The very first day, I think the most fun was making tagines, because everybody got to make their own in their own tagine pot, and they cooked them outside on braziers on the ground. So they're open fire on the ground. And so, you know, and then everybody got to taste everybody else's, and then they end up with, you know, 20 recipes as opposed to just, you know, one recipe. And that was really fun.
So
I love
Morocco.
So you
use a tagine, a real tagine, and...
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So tagine is like a big ceramic plate with a big kind of dome.
Conical top. And what happens during the process is the moisture inside condenses on the top and then drips back in, and it makes a very flavorful stew in the end, and it's really delicious.
Keeps it moist. And...
Yeah. So we made all kinds, like chicken and lamb. And it's really good. And then we made our own couscous, and we made bestia, which is that pie that they make with pigeon. And
you made it with phyllo or with worka?
No, we made it with worka. We made our own worka.
Worka is where they take a round, hot, heated, like griddle kind of.
Yes, it's very
and
much,
they make
yes.
a dough that's kind of spongy, and they basically
tap
just
it.
Hit it like this, and the dough sticks to it. But what happens, you peel off a sheet.
And it's very much like
worka
phyllo
leaves,
dough.
They call them. It's similar to phyllo, but it would have this round kind of pattern.
Right.
And then you butter those, right, and then make your
many
bastia
layers
or...
of butter. Yes, but it was good. It was really fun. We made a huge one. Really beautiful.
No, that's great. That's one trip I wish I could have gone on.
Yep, see? He's vying.
And you've been to Rioja, right?
Rioja, yes, a couple times. Now, that's an unbelievable trip because I've got really close friends there. Some of my best friends in Europe live there. So they have the top restaurant in the Rioja region. So that's where Tempranillo grapes are grown, and it's a fabulous wine region. And so we do a lot of events with them, and some of the things that we do with them are over the top. One of them was we got on the back of this wagon that's on the back of a tractor that's got bales of hay. So it's kind of like a
hayride.
It's a hayride, but it's a Spanish hayride. And so we sit on the bales of the hay, and we go way out into the fields and the olive groves. And out in the olive groves, we have these beautiful tables that are set up to taste olive oil. And so they've got it in the beautiful blue glasses that they use. And one of my favorite things that they did was and everything this brother and sister do is called, it's not coming to me, the name of theirs, Ilecho. I can't remember, no. So anyway, one of the things that they make is they make these chocolates. And so at the end, they hand them out. And so they say, do not chew these chocolates, just put them in your mouth. And they're shaped, they're flat on the bottom, round on the top. And they say, just put it on your tongue, close your mouth, and do not chew. So we all listened, and there we were just
waiting.
And suddenly the chocolate melts and the olive oil comes out, and there's a little bit of salt. The olive oil and the salt and the chocolate together is just amazing. Now, what you have to understand, though, with these people is I asked them, why are there 7 in the box? And they said, because you're supposed to have one every single day of the week. And I couldn't help but buy like 6 boxes myself. They were so delicious. So I'm dying to go back there just to get the chocolates.
Really good. I find when I go into Spain, I have to like take a day to transition onto their time frame, because everything is
so different. It's
laid back and low key.
It's really true. I love Spain, though. I love the food. Obviously, my first book, From Tapas to Meze, but I love small plates from Spain. It's wonderful.
And any recommendations on tapas restaurants or... One of my favorite, I love zarzuela.
Yeah,
my
it's
favorite
really
dish
good.
In the whole city is their octopus and potato.
Yeah, it's delicious. That's a great dish.
Served
He's got
on a
little
plancha that's warm.
Pimenton on it, too.
Pimenton,
smoked paprika.
Olive oil and coarse salt
really
on it.
Good.
It's like heaven.
The coarse salt, too, and it's warm. So it's so good.
That is
it's
one
really
of my
wonderful.
Favorite dishes.
Yeah. No, I love that restaurant, too.
Any other recommendations as far as?
Eat a copita.
Eat a copita.
Come see me. You know, that has been really an interesting project, I have to say. But what I did was, you know, it's funny, you asked me, like, why did I didn't go that far away. I mean, I know I'm going all the way back to that, but I didn't go that far away from what I was doing at Chez Panisse. And what I tried to do at the restaurant was make every single thing. So we make all of our own tortillas. We make our own chipotle. We make everything. And,
in
you know, using
the closet of a kitchen.
In a tiny kitchen. Uh-huh. And in the summer, we were doing 500 people on Saturday and 500 on Sunday. And we only have 60 seats. And that's pushing it. That's 10 outside.
That's in and out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it really has been a fun project. And what I did was, it isn't me always cooking. I mean, I brought in Mexican chefs who are really wonderful.
Uh-huh.
So I want you to rest assured that
you'll have a damn good margarita and
and some great food. We do have great margaritas, though. We do have the best.
No, it is good.
They did say we had the best in the Bay Area.
Right.
They're very easy to make. Very easy.
Good ingredients.
Three ingredients. That's all it is.
You like the agave syrup, correct? And you put no triple sec.
No. And it's we do it with 2 ounces of Herradura tequila. We use 1 ounce of lime juice and 3/4 of an ounce of agave nectar and 3/4 of an ounce of water.
Uh-huh.
And honestly, they're delicious.
Rocks, huh? Salt or no salt?
I'm a no salt.
Have you had that product? I was in Mexico in Cabo, and they have that dried tequila worm, which they mix with salt. And
I have not had that.
I think that's one of the most amazing. Mm. John just brought me back some.
Right.
But
right.
It's amazing, just the smokiness of that. You know,
interesting.
How it smells.
Yeah, I haven't had it.
All right. How about your most memorable meal, Joanne, other than Copita or Gary Danko
memorable.
Or anywhere in the world?
I have to say probably my most memorable would be I was 24 years old living in Boston, and I just moved into a new apartment, and a friend gave me a bottle of wine. And this is how much wine I drank in those days. It was a bottle of Mouton Cadet. It took us 2 nights to drink the wine. So it was just a friend and I. She and I moved, Charlotte, my friend Charlotte, and I moved into this apartment. So the first night we drank the first half of the bottle. The second night, the second half. And when I looked at the glass the second night, the inside of the glass, there was a fly clinging to the inside of the glass. And so it was a time, I was only 24, right it off to
and
young
poor.
Age. And I wrapped the fly in aluminum foil and sent it to Chateau Mouton Rothschild, the top winery probably in the world, and said that I was so upset getting this fly in a bottle of wine. And they wrote back to me and said if I was ever in France, they'd like me to be their special guest for lunch. And I think that's really where my love of wine started, because I ended up going that summer. I had planned to go there for my 25th birthday. And when I got there, the first place we went was, and we had a fabulous lunch there. And the first wine we had was 1966, 1948, 1922. And then after that, we had Chateau d'Yquem. And we started with 1922. We went to 1918. And the last one we had was from 1898. And I sang my entire way to Biarritz, which was about 2 hours. I certainly should not have been in a car. And it was the most incredible meal in my life. It really was. Besides that, would be, I have to say, my grandfather's picnic table, because that was pretty special for me, too. And then, of course, eating at Restaurant Gary Danko.
Well, that's always fun, right? So all of that because of a fly, Joanne, huh? I love it. So all you consumers, make sure that if you have flies in your wine.
Yeah, make sure you send it.
It could be the best.
Send it, wrap it in foil.
All right, John, we have one obligatory question that we're asking. What is your 60-second idea to change the world?
Well, I believe that many issues are settled over the table. That's my, you know, I love the table. So my aim really is to get people back to the kitchen cooking really healthy, nourishing food that they will feed to their families and their friends and also eat themselves.
So all of the presidents should sit down for a big meal is what you're saying. So
yes.
On a side note, Joanne has been appointed to America's Chef Corps by Hillary Clinton and the U.S. State Department, and she's part of 80 chefs.
Yes.
That you sit on an advisory board or you're going to...
And what it is really... over the table. It's all about, you know, relationships through food as opposed to anything else. It's really about food and introducing American culture through food.
Well, I'm always of the idea that you should never mix food and politics.
So right.
They should never be spoken in the same sentence.
Right.
But, all right, Joanne, thank you very much for sharing all of your wisdom and secrets of cooking, cooking with confidence. Hopefully everybody here will go out and look at the book, buy the book. Joanne will be signing them out in the library right after this, and we can mingle. We'll have a Joanne Gary mingle out there.
I think you can also taste my red wine.
Oh, there's red wine, too. That's
yes.
right. So
yes.
Perfect. So.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.